Good evening, James McKinney with my Science Hour, September 24th, 2015. Very interesting topics to cover tonight. First of all, negative cost of electricity in Texas. Now, what's this story about? When I first saw it, I was kind of scratching my head. And anyway, this came out, sent in from a listener. The title of the article, this is from the Slate, which, is, by the way, is kind of a controlled disinformation rag on the internet, kind of like, Wired, very similar, very controlled, very slanted venue. The name of the article is The Night They Drove the Price of Electricity Down. Now, it says wind power was so plentiful in Texas that producers sold it at a negative price. What? So anyway, I was trying to figure out exactly what's going on here. But as it turns out, Texas has a system in which producers almost every 15 minutes bid on selling electricity. Now, get this. This is strange. Typically, if you have bids, you pay the lowest bidder. That's what you would do. Well, in Texas, they pay the highest bidder for electricity. So this is very strange. But anyway, the idea was that one night it was very windy. Texas is the most windmill, three-blade windmill state on the planet. And they claim that it provides 9% of their electricity. Now, they also use installed base, which they call, that's the total amount of power that these things could produce if they were producing at maximum power. But typically, they're running at around 20%. But at any rate, the reason they were able to sell electricity back to the state, because everybody's sleeping, there's not a lot of electric use, it wasn't a night particularly of high air conditioning use or whatever, for this particular night, because the wind was blowing, I suspect that people didn't have as much air conditioning, and especially the cities were all shut down, you know, that type of thing. So all of the big users that happened in the daytime weren't there. So this is at night, it's windy. But here's the deal. They get subsidies. They get enough subsidy where they could actually pay the electric company to take electricity and make a profit. But do you think the people in Texas paid the same amount for their electricity? Of course they did. Now, this is just amazing. So anyway, that was one article that I just couldn't believe. By the way, on that same note, the wind generator is progressing. I don't have a delivery date yet, but keep your ears tuned to the rails, so to speak. You know, that's an old trick. If you didn't know where that expression came from, if you want to know if there's a railroad train coming, you put your ear down to the rail and you actually can hear it coming for many, many miles away because the sound travels along the rail. At any rate, that's a little story from Texas. Here's another story that I found an amazing. It says the ocean is broken. This is from the Newcastle Herald. And I believe this is out of Australia. It says the ocean is broken. This is back from actually from a couple of years ago. But a guy named Ivan McFadden aboard a ship called Funnel Web, which is his sailboat, takes off from Australia and sails up to Japan. Now, he's made this trip many times. He said the ocean was dead, partly due to overfishing. But then when they got to Japan and they started sailing east, over first to Hawaii and then off to the west coast of the United States, he said the ocean was dead. They saw one whale with a giant tumor on the side of its head. He said it made him sick, but there were no turtles, dolphins, the typical array of sea life that you would see when you're out in the ocean. Basically, the Pacific Ocean is dead. And, you know, it starts right at the very base of the food chain. Somebody asked me on a radio show a couple of weeks ago, I was a guest, they said, could you filter the Pacific Ocean and get the radioactivity out? Well, I don't know what you're going to do with the radioactivity if you did filter it out. What are you going to do? Make a radioactivity ball and what are you going to do with it? But the point is that it is being filtered out. It has been it's in the food cycle. The food cycle begins with the smallest plant elements, the plankton. So that's what they do. They filter out the seawater. They filter out the minerals and the any other beneficial aspects of seawater. They filter it out into the plankton, and then the larger sea life come along and eat the plankton and goes all the way up the food chain to the largest animals, the whales. So the idea is that the heaviest concentration of whatever it is, that's why the food chain is very rich, because the large animals can get all of their nutrients from eating smaller and smaller, and as the small things eat the plankton, and something eats them, and then something eats them, and all the way up the food chain. All of that, the minerals, the good things out of the ocean are concentrated till you get up to the whales, and that's why the whales can exist, because they are getting sufficient nutrients to completely fill their those large bodies. But that's also true of radioactivity. If you have a whale out there, he's consuming the concentration of, you know, millions if not billions of small sea life, concentrating whatever is in there, including the radiation. So yeah, just basically is killed off. I couldn't believe a couple of years ago, Scripps Institute, which is supposedly the biggest, most important and knowledgeable sea studying agency, or it's a private institute actually, the Scripps Institute out of San Diego, La Jolla, wherever they are over there. And they said that, oh no, there's not enough concentration in the ocean, and therefore there's no problem to sea life. Well, that's the entire point, is that's there's very low concentrations of everything in the ocean. It's mainly water and salt water, just with sodium chloride. But there's all of the other minerals. And so that's how they get into the big animals, is through that food chain. Here's something else sent in by a listener. And he says, the name of the email it comes in, it says, here it is, you are right again. And this has to do with a house in California. It says, utility company says solar panels are too powerful. This is comes in the 17th of September, just this past week. And here's what it says. I want to read this. A couple from California were told by their utility company that the solar panels used in their home to save on their utility bills were too powerful. And so it says Southern California residents Ron and Sarah Hall were paying too much in electric bills and decided to make a switch to solar, contracting Solar City to outline their roof with 36 solar panels. And they show a picture of the house. The whole house is covered with solar panels, the whole roof. Nearly a year ago, the installation was complete, and for that year, the energy bill did not change. Isn't that? Listen to this. It turns out the utility company had never turned on the panels. Why does the utility company turn on the panels? Well, anyway, we'll read on. Because the panels were producing energy at 120% efficiency. They were 28% too efficient and didn't fall under the limitations placed on residents for power creation. Now, nothing can run at 100% efficiency. That's ludicrous. But what they're saying is that the standard set for home generation, they were 128% of that. So they were not allowed to use there was a limitation for what they could create. So I will read on. The state believes that if a resident is making too much power, they can sell the extra and are potential energy distributors liable for additional commercial business regulations. The Halls were not told. They just kept paying their exorbitant bills. The mistake was on SolarCity. That, by the way, is Elon Musk's baby out there, selling solar panels. I've talked about that before, that it's a mistake to invest in solar panels because this is what's going to happen. They're going to shut them off. They're not going to let you use them. Exactly what's happening here. Gee, could I have been right again? I just hate being right all the time. No, I've made mistakes. But on this solar deal, I'll tell you, I'm exactly right on, and I'm the only person on the planet talking about this. Anyway, I'll read on. They had miscalculated the amount of energy needed by the halls and installed too much. They installed too many solar panels. Though it is also pointing out what looks like a flaw in the system. The state's regulatory system is attempting to limit people's power to control the energy. Doggone! Why would that be? SolarCity apologized for the error and uninstalled the panels at no cost to the halls. The family was put through the ringer and said they will not be ordering from them again. SolarCity was one of the best, and we decided to go with them, Hall said, adding, it's frustrating. Wow. Anyway, that's what's going to happen all over the planet, boys and girls. Solar panels, these people are going to install them, and they're going to come along and tell you you cannot use them. And you're going to be limited because simply, and as the more and more installation base are installed, basically the electric power companies cannot handle it. Okay, next topic. The European countries are flooded, in fact, with immigrants, just pouring across the border. The Eastern European countries have joined the European Union. I forget what countries were over there, Slovakia, and I forget what other ones. But they're being forced by the economic union, the European Union, to take on large numbers of refugees, and these people have the option to opt out as part of the regulation imposed by the European Union. But be that as it may, they're being flooded with immigrants from the Ukraine that are leaving from the desolation going on over there. They're getting infiltrated heavily by Syrians, people coming up through Serbia, through Eastern Europe. Oh my goodness, it's just a disaster. So they're trying to figure out how to halt it, how to stop the flow of people. The refugees, you may as well call them refugees. The Mexicans in the United States are financial refugees from a country that's totally out of whack. The countries are just, there's these people that are coming into Greece and from I believe it's Turkey. It's just incredible. I mean, they don't have the means to support this. The point is, the world is just topsy-turvy. Then the good old Pope comes out and says he's going to help the poor. Well, why doesn't the Vatican maybe start with liquidating the vast holdings they have on land and other things around the world and give it away to the poor? Well, they ain't going to do that. What they're going to do is try and fish it out of your pocket, because the Pope happens to be right now out in the eastern United States on his little tour. You have to understand that he represents the Rothschild banking empire, the United Nations agendas, and geez, is this world ever a mess? They've got this world so just tanked financially. The third world countries, I've been seeing this, watching this around the third world countries, that the Vatican, the Rothschild banking empire, controlling the dollar, of course, through the Federal Reserve, which is nothing federal and nothing reserve about it. They have nothing in reserve. It's just fiat money at its best. But destroying the middle and upper classes of third world countries because the dollar has gone up to, in some places, more than two times the exchange rate that it was 8 months ago, completely obliterating the middle and upper classes in these countries. So at any rate, just unbelievable, making this world an extremely dangerous place to live in, let alone travel in. I used to travel. In fact, I traveled in some pretty rough and tumble places in my day, and I'm still here to talk about it. But then you were dealing with just the population. Now you're dealing with economic factors that are beyond. Before, they were just dealing with local economic factors. Now they're dealing with stresses that would have never been seen in the world before. You have in Mexico, you have the immigrants coming from much poorer conditions in Central America, trying to get into Mexico, which is not doing well. Anyway, I could talk on and on about that. Just a quick mention, by the way, my main science topic, I will be talking about Pluto tonight. Just incredible, incredible released information this past week on the atmosphere of Pluto. Something that I talked about earlier, something that has scientists, alleged scientists, scratching their various body parts because they can't figure out what's going on. Pluto will be my main science topic. My web page, go visit it, jmccsci.com. That's the short version. The long version, of course, jmccsci.com. But many people misspell that, so I got the short URL for doing radio shows and for quick reference on radio shows, jmcc, S as in Sam, C as in Charlie, I as in Indigo.com. I've spent some serious time upgrading my web page to become phone and tablet compatible, and I have somewhat my own style. It's the three columns that I developed. It fits nicely on a cell phone or tablet. You can expand with your fingers to read one of the columns or browse through the columns, but everything is click into subpages. The landing page, my home page, is very short, and so even though there's still 6 gigabytes of information there, so the things I want you to make sure you look at is the picture of the day subpage. I have a new little item called the 3-minute news brief and archive, and that's interesting. Every few days I update that. It's a local 3-minute news brief about various recent news, etc. But also some colorful landing, some pictures that I have in the background, and then there's a bar that has announcement dealing with the show content. This week I have a picture of the atmosphere of Pluto there, and that I can change. I wish I could maintain this on a daily basis, so you won't see all of this changing on a daily basis. I also have a thought of the day subpage. I haven't updated that for a while, but all of this information, click and read through it. But basically, it's driving the traffic towards reading my books, listening to the CDs, watching the DVDs, and the WeCalendar Sun Star Clock is something that has really sold widely. There's still a lot of people that have not purchased that. It's $44, including shipping. But the WeCalendar Sun Star Clock that you would use if we had a complete breakdown of infrastructure and you had to create a clock and a calendar out of nothing. And your watch, some people go, "Well, I got a good watch." Well, I'll tell you something. That's going to break down pretty quick, and you're going to get so you don't trust it. Is this really the right day? Etc. So this, and also after a pole shift, if we ever had a major event, you would be able to rebuild the calendar. And so it's a very nice little device, comes with instructions, called the WeCalendar Sun Star Clock. It's about the size of a piece of paper, but very solid a plate that it's printed on, just almost indestructible. You can leave it out in the sun, the weather. It's printed with indelible ink, very modern printing technique on aluminum slate tab, and would fit in your briefcase or whatever. It's and very instructional for kids. Teaches them how the sun works through the annual calendar, and it's good any place on the planet, northern or southern hemisphere, the WeCalendar Sun Star Clock. Also, there's a 10% sale on water filters and water filter elements. The 10 packs of water filter elements are there on sale, 10% off. So check that out and go visit the homepage. It's just really, I'm really proud of that effort and making it. This is one of the big things today, phone and tablet compatible. I'm still not 100% there, but it's very, and I love the bright colors. And just to me, it's been a lot of work, but very much worth it. So that'll allow me to work into the future. I'm going to be adding a lot more science commentary. And like I say, the whole point here is to have everything driving the public towards my books, my printed material, the CDs, DVDs, etc., so that you learn that. That is the base. That is the base for understanding. And, of course, these radio shows are free, commercial-free, no interruptions. How to study my material? Just start reading them. Just a quick note, and especially for students, when I was in school and I went through a lot of rigorous training through my high school, college, double major in college mathematics and physics double major, my master's degree in physics, nuclear solid-state physics from Tulane University. And I could have gone on for a PhD, but I said, no, I don't want to specialize. I want to become broadly educated in the world. And so I went out and I traveled through the world and became, I got a different type of education. And thank goodness that allowed me, that's some of the base that I use today to understand how the world works. Too many people that continue on for that PhD are buttonholed into that topic. And really, they don't have life experiences. That's really a big problem with educated people today. They have no idea what's going on in the world. They get that job, and that's all they can do is that one little thing, and they don't know anything else. And once they're in that job with the government-supported money, and whether it's university or an industry, hey, they're controlled. They can't say anything. They can't do anything. They are buttonholed. And I have this radio show. I have the biggest audience in the world. I've got the people listening, and this is a show dealing with science. So definitely was a very good choice on my part. I went through a lot of bumps and lumps, let's put it that way, over the year. But you are the benefit of that. You receive the benefit of that now because I can look through things and tell what's going on. So at any rate, tsunamis, oosh. There was a tsunami just the other day, and where was that? In the coast off of Chile. It was a fairly significant earthquake around the 8-point region, and it created a pretty good swell back on the mainland of Chile, but they had tsunami warnings in Hawaii and the Pacific Ocean. So I thought I'd do a little summary here, something that many people do not think about, but since 95% of the world population live near the coastline, subject to tsunamis, let's talk a little bit about these. The Pacific Ocean, and typically a tsunami is caused, number one, if there was an earthquake. Number two, if the greater tsunamis are typically initiated when a landslide occurs. These can come off of a island or volcanic island, and it's called slewing. What happens is as the volcanic material builds up, layer upon layer upon layer, and then it starts to rain. The rain seeps down in between the layers, and it creates like a grease layer, a layer of almost like lubricant or whatever between these layers. And then you have tremendous mass building up on this shelf, but of course on a slope leading down to the ocean. Or it might be underwater, some of this. But at any rate, at some point, you might have a little earthquake or a jiggle or something. And once that starts moving, that massive landmass, it's going down as far as it's. These will slew out into the ocean. You can see these, interestingly enough, on Mars. Take a look around Mars at some of the older pictures, especially that haven't been photoshopped. And around Olympus Mons, the biggest volcano in the solar system, it's completely eroded around the edges, showing that Mars had a vast ocean at one point and very recently. Also, I might add, All of the indications, I have a lot of information on my subpage indicating that Mars's oceans were extremely recent, literally thousands of years ago. And then the big comet Venus came through the solar system, ripped off the atmosphere and oceans of Mars, leaving the hulk we see there today. But Olympus Mons had this kind of slewing activity, and you can see the missing land from around the outside of the volcano. And then the Pacific Ocean is famous for this, the Canary Islands out there in the Atlantic, the Eastern, the Azores. But, okay, so that is the second and probably potentially most damaging type of tsunami that comes from a landslide. It displaces a tremendous amount of water. For example, in the Hawaiian Islands, there are entire regions. And you can look up into the mountains and see these all over on all of the islands, not any specific island, but all of them. And you see vast regions when you think, oh, gee, that was erosion. And you might think that, but then what's happened is in doing sea samplings and borings out in the ocean, in the sub-ocean terrain, they have discovered that it was really the land from up there on the island that slewed down into the ocean, sometimes many miles offshore. But the result is that as the land slews off and into the ocean, the returning tsunami could be as much as a half a mile high. Yes, boys and girls, half a mile high tsunami, destroying everything in its path. And basically, so that would basically kill anything, any living thing. And that's why, so when the Polynesians got to the Hawaiian Islands and the South Pacific Islands, they had a mythology of ancient, they were looking for something. They didn't just start out thinking there was something on that vast ocean. They were looking for their motherland of Lemuria, and which had been approximately between the Hawaiian Islands and Japan, an entire continent that went under at allegedly the same time as Atlantis. And we don't really know when that was. I mean, that could have been 40,000 years ago. It could have been 20,000. It could have been 8,000 years ago. We don't know very much about it. But it went under. It was concurrent with Atlantis. But at any rate, the idea was that the Polynesians, the ones that were had survived this, started making their paths back across the ocean from the farther west in the Pacific, the western Pacific, coming east along the Pacific, and then populating the islands as they came. But during the great Venus event, of course, there were land waves, etc., and ocean waves, tremendous ocean waves. Okay, so anyway, I'm just going to name off briefly some of the main tsunami regions of the world. In the Pacific Ocean, of course, Japan. These are the earthquakes that are create the tsunamis that hit the Hawaiian Islands, for example. And, of course, the coast of Chile, also in the Pacific Ocean, creating tsunamis that affect the other Western Pacific locations. Hawaii itself being the source of some of the largest tsunamis. A lot of people don't know that. They think that's paradise, but the slewing of those Pacific Oceans coming from, they're massive volcanoes, extremely large amounts of earth, volcanic earth that just flow into the ocean, and the reverberating ocean wave, sometimes, like I say, up to a half a mile high, this discovered by the geologists at the University of Hawaii. I did quite a few shows on that a number of years ago. Also, the Canary Islands in the Atlantic. Okay, that is the series of tsunamis that has, the tsunamis have flowed all the way into Pennsylvania. When Ignatius Donnelly, the lieutenant governor of Minnesota, grew up in the coal fields of Pennsylvania, and he said that they are layered. There's a layer of coal, then there's gravel, then there's a layer of coal, then there's gravel. And many layers of this. So obviously these are tsunamis that came in from the Atlantic Ocean repeatedly. And of course, the source of that, those tsunamis, is the Canary Islands. There's now a shelf ready to break off in the Canary Islands, and believe me, there's nothing that can stop this from happening. It would completely devastate the Caribbean islands. I was analyzing this. Puerto Rico might be safe. The reason being, and we find that the Arawak Indians lived on the east coast very successfully of Puerto Rico before the Spanish came. The explorers, the conquistadores, as they say, but they lived successfully there in a area that would be ripe with tsunamis coming from the Canary Islands. And how did they do it? Well, the reality is that there's a tremendous trench off the northeast corner of Puerto Rico, so the tsunamis simply would pass like just another ocean wave. Where they really cause problems is like along the east coast of the United States, or in the Bahamas, or in the Cuba, the other Caribbean islands, where there's a big shelf, and that tsunami rears up on the lower part of the wave, drags behind, and so the wave builds up and it comes in as a huge wall of water, and that's the dangerous tsunamis. By the way, I was saying that the guy out in the Pacific on his boat saw tons of garbage, just all kinds of stuff floating. And that was from the tsunami that went into Japan and just took all of this stuff out and just dumped it in the ocean. And that's strewn all over the Pacific Ocean now, which is dead from Fukushima, which, by the way, was not caused by that tsunami. I've talked about that. Because the building just on the seaside of the towers that blew up, literally were blown up, the warehouse that's on the seaside is totally undamaged. It's sitting there just fresh as a daisy. So it was not the tsunami that caused the destruction at Japan, and any moron could see that. That if the tsunami came far enough inland across, it would have had to destroy that warehouse. And then, of course, 600,000 spent fuel rods on the roofs of the actual nuclear generators, the four towers there. That's what melted down and is still leaking into the Pacific Ocean, literally killing it. Okay, so once again, the Canary Islands in the eastern Atlantic. The South China Sea, another area that we've seen in modern times, huge tsunamis. The Sumatra tsunamis from the Strait of Sunda, that created the tremendous tsunami that devastated India all the way to Madagascar and eastern Africa. Okay, so once again, living on the coast, let's take, for example, the Florida coast, would be just completely devastated. In fact, there's a possibility that a tsunami could wash over the entire peninsula of Florida if one of the very large tsunamis coming from the Canary Islands. Russia bans GMO. This is a huge story. Monsanto was banned basically from Russia, and also glyphosates, which is the main component in Roundup. The European Union also pulling glyphosates from the shelf because research has shown that it causes many chronic diseases, including cancer. And get this, Nature magazine, that's the equivalent of Science, but in the Nature comes from England, the UK. There was an article published in there relating Monsanto's glyphosate Roundup to tumors in rats. Now, Nature is a peer-reviewed, high-level, supposedly, and I don't have anything to do with these peer-reviewed journals. It's all a good old boy club with rubber stamp peer reviewing. But be that as it may, it is the good old boys club. But Monsanto, get this, had Nature magazine rescind the peer-reviewed article. The Monsanto puts pressure on Nature magazine. Nature magazine rescinds the article. The author of the article stands by his research, but Nature magazine rescinds it because Monsanto put pressure on Nature magazine. Do you call that science? Oh, Ms. Who pays the biggest price or squawks the loudest? Oh my goodness. Yeah, that's just choice. But be that as it may, Russia bans GMO completely. Also, France, what other countries? France, Scotland, Germany, Greece, Latvia, all have banned and opted out of the Europeans' law that requires them basically to accept genetically modified foods. Interesting. I just can't believe the world we live in. Also from Russia, a cosmonaut just came back 879 days in outer space, a record, gravitationless. Now, this is somewhat of a milestone because it basically proves that long term they've learned how to live in outer space. If you follow the design, the direction of my book, The Diamond Principle, we have to be putting large colonies of people out in space. So the fact that one guy spent that much time in space, to me, after 50 years of a space program, whether it's Russia here or wherever, is ludicrous. It's too little, too little. It's just really not enough. The entire issue of sending large volumes of people to be autonomous in outer space. And remember, that's not a financially viable proposition. So you'll never get the government or financial venture capitalists to do it. Why would you send and invest money in something that goes off and doesn't pay you back anything? Well, that's the only way to salvage the human species. And I assume, I would assume that somehow we're genetically unique in this universe, in spite of the fact that if we're related to other genetically similar species in the universe, that we are unique, just like like they say of a frog. This is so incredible. You know, the ecology-minded people will save a frog. They'll stop the destruction of a forest for a frog, but they won't do it for the human race. You know, how insane is that? Okay, well, off to the main science topic, which I'm just fascinated by Pluto. I have been since I realized a long time ago that it would act like a comet. And this is something I've talked about for literally decades because all of the planets act like comets. What was released this past week, and go to my webpage, right at the top, I have a clickable item for the pictures, these high-resolution pictures of Pluto. And you can see the atmosphere, the tremendous ice structures, mountains, ice mountains. There's an ocean that is breaks up and has divisions in it, mainly nitrogen, but partly water ice also, because there is a good deal of water out there besides nitrogen and methane also. But at any rate, the pictures of the mountains, etc. This the surface of Pluto is very interesting. Clearly, there is heat involved, and that's one thing that I found interesting that NASA never did. Why didn't they turn that camera around? They took a picture of Neptune and Uranus. They're out in that same neck of the woods, and they had fairly decent pictures, which means they got a pretty good little telescope on that spacecraft that they're not telling anybody about. But they never looked back and took a picture of the sun. Now the sun would look like a pretty much an average star out there, so there's no solar heating associated with Pluto. Extreme small amounts of light, visible and ultraviolet light, etc., reaching Pluto. And so that's not the cause of its activity. The heating, I talked about this before in my show, is called Joule heating. It's the same heating that occurs in the Earth's Pacific Ocean when we have El Niño. And by the way, just in a side note, they're saying that this year will be a tremendous El Niño year, but it's the exact opposite. The weather that's occurring on the west coast of South America is extreme drought. These poor boys just can't get it right no matter what they do. Last winter, if you remember, there was no El Niño heating of the Pacific Ocean, and it was the rainiest winter season, Christmas season on record, and extended far, far into the spring, all the way into May, June. and even into July, heavy, heavy rains throughout all of South America, especially the Pacific coast. And that's where the term El Nino came from. So I had pointed that out, that they were totally wrong. So they tried to fudge that and say, well, there's a hot spell up by Oregon or something, or hot patch. What did they call it? The blob. These poor boys just, that's pathetic. Anyway, now they're saying there's going to be a record El Nino this year, but in a record El Nino year, there would be extreme rain on the west coast of equatorial South America. It right now is an extreme drought. Exactly the opposite. Once again, proving, I mean, how many strikes can you have before you're out, boys and girls? Okay, but anyway, the reason I mentioned that is because the association with Pluto. But in the heating of Pluto by what's called Joule heating, these are electrical currents, the discharge of the solar capacitor, and Pluto is right out there on the edge of the nebular ion cloud that is held back by solar wind pressure, and of course, and it's in a perfect position to discharge that part of the solar capacitor with a very good supply of material. NASA did detect the tail. They've talked about this, but then they go, oh, it's blowing off the planet Pluto. Well, we did calculations. It didn't take us long to figure out that if the material were leaving Pluto at the rate they talked about it, Pluto wouldn't have been there, 5 million years ago. It would have been dissipated by the rate at which material would be flowing off of the planet. What's going on is that material is flowing into Pluto. It's building up. It's becoming bigger. And you can see this, plus the atmosphere. Now, this is the point I want to get to. I've been discussing the surface of Pluto. NASA's spacecraft, the New Horizon, passed Pluto, turned around, excuse me, lost my voice for a second, turned around and took a picture of Pluto as it was whisking away to the far side, the anti-sunward side of Pluto, and captured its atmosphere. Now, there's at least 7 layers of haze in the atmosphere that you can detect. And so this means that this material, now there's no serious wind on Pluto, that not like on Earth at any rate, but they're saying a lot of the weather activity on Pluto is very similar to that of Earth. But how could there be weather on Pluto if there's no solar light input? Because what standard meteorology talks about on Earth weather is that the sunlight comes in, it heats up the atmosphere, and that's the cause of tornadoes and hurricanes and foul weather and rain and everything else. Well, it's ludicrous, because even though we do get a healthy dose of sun every day, it's not what creates our weather. We would have extremely bland weather if that were the source of energy for our weather systems. Sometimes you'll see a front cloud system, a series of clouds that are just an energy, just you can see the energy built up in those clouds into the far side of it, to the outside of it. There's nothing. There's no, you know, air masses, cold and hot air masses moving and touching, etc. That's all complete fairy tale science. What's going on is these are electrically driven storms. That electricity comes from the solar system, from Earth discharging the solar capacitor. Very simply, and that's what's going on at Pluto. So Pluto has weather. It has haze in its atmosphere. This is material that's coming in. It's being segregated in the atmospheric processes, and thus the haze layers. I mean, there's no reason for there to be haze layers on Pluto. Once again, if it were simply up to the light energy coming in from the sun, there wouldn't be sufficient to even have an atmosphere. And that's something I pointed out a long time ago, that when they were looking at Pluto with the Hubble Space Telescope, it was clear that Pluto was exhibiting characteristics of an atmosphere of gaseous nitrogen, gaseous methane, etc. And so in gas form, and you can tell the difference, it was not just solidified on the surface. And so therefore, the fact that Pluto had an atmosphere was proof positive that it had an energy source apart from solar energy. There's just not enough sunlight out there. to create the energy systems that we see at Pluto at work. In fact, the lake bed, the ocean bed there, is all broken up. It's fractured. Like growing up in Minnesota, as a kid, I saw the lake every spring fracturing and dividing up into little kind of islands that float there frozen, and then those islands somewhat bumping against each other. And in fact, one time, I don't know if I mentioned this on a previous show, I went in a boat, like a fishing boat with a motor on it, with some a guide up on the Canadian border with Minnesota during the spring ice out. And we actually were able to bump and move these plates of ice. So if there's somebody on the planet that knows about how ice works and how it breaks up into islands, etc., it's me. I've been there. I've seen these firsthand. Minnesota is the land of lakes. And so that's exactly what Pluto looks like. But the scientists, of course, can't figure this out because clearly they must have had their nose in a textbook if they were ever in Minnesota, rather than looking out at a beautiful lake. So that's, once again, you have to live with nature to understand nature, the simplicity, the beauty, the complexity. So at any rate, Pluto is an amazing planet. Once again, go to my homepage, and here's how the homepage is organized. At the very top is just like the landing information, you know, a little bit of information about the website at the very top, and there's a star pattern background. Right below that is a bar, which I changed the pictures, and that will be typically where I talk about the last week's show topic or the coming week's show topic. And there is a clickable item. You can click on that picture. There's a little note there that says click here, and it'll take you to the Pluto photo subpage, where these big, big, high-density photos are displayed. And you can look at them, look at the surface of Pluto, and you will realize that this is not just some old ragged planet that never did anything. This is a live, vibrant, active, very much with it, modern planet that's very much changing and very much accumulating new material, not blowing away. That atmosphere would have blown away a million years ago if it were leaving. It's a very faint atmosphere, but it's very much there, and that's accumulating. And then what happens is during the on the dark side, remember that Pluto has a sun side and a dark side, and the dark side gets absolutely no sunlight at all, but it has a nice atmosphere. And at that distance from the sun, with no light at all, no heating of any kind, the atmosphere would simply diffuse around to the night side, because it had to equalize the pressure. So part of it, but on the night side, it would simply crystallize and rain out of the sky and fall on the planet. NASA has also stated, and which is very much true, that there's a hydrological cycle. In other words, what happens on Earth is the humidity, it goes up, it rains, and then the humidity rises and it rains again. And these cycles actually cycle and carry the moisture up to the north and the south poles, where they fall and freeze and stay. I like to give the example of the story of the World War II fighter pilots. These are prop plane World War II planes that are up in the Arctic flying, and they had an emergency and they all had to land. So they landed. They went in and saved all these guys, got them out of there. But they had to leave the planes there. So it was, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, I forget what it was, but certainly many years after World War II era, these guys decided, hey, why don't we get an expedition together? We'll go up and grab those planes. They're salvage. You know, we could just get in them, start them up. Fuel should be there, everything. We'll fly them out of there, and we got ourselves some nice World War II relic planes. So they go up there. They know exactly where the spot is, and they go up there, and it's just solid packed ice. And they're going, there's no planes. What happened to the planes? So they started digging down, and I can't remember how far they had to dig. It was like a long ways, and they found the planes. So that means that the North and the South Pole are building up constantly. The South Pole is sliding off Antarctica land base, because the land base is warm. That's because it used to be in historical times much farther north between the before the Venus pole shift occurred, about estimated, and like take that with a grain of salt, estimated by Velikovsky's estimate, which is the only one around, so it's the only one that we really have to quote. Velikovsky says 3,500 years ago, right now closer to 4,000 years ago, but somewhere in that time frame when the calendars changed, etc., and all of the countries talked about, all of the ancients left word that the Venus, the comet, had raged through the solar system, encountering Earth on two occasions. So at any rate, back to Pluto. Just go to my webpage, click on the, where it's right at the top, that there's the first very top part with the stars, little intro material. Then right below that, there's a horizontal bar that goes across, and you'll see the atmosphere of Pluto in a picture there. There's a little note there. Click here. Click on that. You'll go to this Pluto subpage. All of these amazing photos. And remember, these are Photoshop photos, and they're also not taking photos from a distance and distributing them to the public, demonstrating clearly that Pluto was acting like a comet and its moons. So if you saw the distant photos, they didn't release any photos from May, the time they first started approaching Pluto, where they were getting relatively close. They could distinguish the moon separate from the planets, very distinct. And I have, by the way, have captured that also on, go down in the pictures of the day subpage, and you'll see those pictures of Pluto and its moons, and you can definitely see the comet tails surrounding the moons and Pluto. And of course, they didn't release any photos from the time that photo was taken and released. And of course, they didn't realize that what to look for in their complete ignorance. But I knew what to look for and grabbed those photos and posted them. It's actually a little video, a series of photos that show the comet tails whipping around planet Pluto. And it looked very much, in fact, like Comet Hale-Bopp, although Comet Hale-Bopp was very much a raging comet when it was the Hubble Space Telescope discovered it, when the Hubble Space Telescope first started capturing pictures of Hale-Bopp and releasing them to the public. And then, of course, those pictures were immediately taken down off the Internet because they showed distinctly a companion orbiting the main nucleus of Hale-Bopp, something that NASA denied. And then, of course, well, that's a story. By the way, that's a good point. You have to listen to my release July 23rd this year, the Hale-Bopp Planet X Harrington Expedition Update. If you have not listened to that, it's an absolute must listen to understand. There are people, the feedback I'm getting back from listeners is that is the most important Planet X information in history, literally. To understand, well, just go back and listen. That's available on the webpage. By the way, I've been updating also the sales page. And, I manage these pages myself for a very good reason, because I've been approached by people in the past, all of this. I've had people try and help me, and it never really has worked out. And also, there's the unfortunate thing that many times people are sent to so-called Be Help, and they're really targeting me. And so the only way I can do it is the way I've always done things, work alone. So my webpage is probably not the greatest, but I've also updated the sales page to make it a bit more user-friendly. So at any rate, go check out the sales page also. Just if nothing else, just see that it has changed and it's a little more user-friendly, especially down in the book area. Back to Pluto. What can we understand about Pluto? Well, how does this affect your lives? Well, if Pluto is acting like a comet, comets, according to standard science, are dirty snowballs that they heat up, their atmospheres heat up when they get close to the sun. And, of course, Pluto is not near the sun, so how could it act like a comet? Well, that's because it's discharging the solar capacitor. Also, I want to let you know that they are sending this New Horizons spacecraft. They've obviously whipped it around Pluto, and it's going out to visit another minor planet out there, Pluto-sized planet. And after that, it's going to whip around that planet, and it's going out to one of the big ones, one of the Planet X objects out there, the big ones, potentially Jupiter-sized object out there. NASA's doing this, but they're not telling you or me about it. This is all hush-hush. And now you have to understand that this was in the works long before any of this was really made public to the public. So they've been tracking these things for a very long time. Now, does that mean that Planet X is going to come in and crash into Earth and everybody's going to die? No. These objects are in orbits that are way out there. Typically, if they would have been on an orbit coming into the solar system, they would have been here already. But we don't know. We literally don't have any information, and it's only one little teeny piece of the solar system. So basically, what we have to do is start with the public information, have a research program, a real research program where the information is available to the public, because the public space agency, the NASA's and the European Space Agencies and the other ones around the world, are totally useless. All that information, if there is good information, goes up the ladder to Tier 1 science, goes up to the Rothschild banking community that owns and operates all science on this planet except for me, and distorts whatever is presented to you, the public. That's why they're so intent. That's why there have been all of the explosions lately on private attempts to get anything into space, including Elon Musk, who has signed contracts with the devil, with the CIA, and Google, and Fidelity, and everybody else. They're even blowing up his spacecraft. So it's kind of a wild west, woolly wild west out there in the space world. And they don't want anybody, they sure would not want me out there. It's bad enough that they allow this radio show to air every week. By the way, I've been guest on many radio shows recently, talking quite a bit about the Vatican issue with the Pope in the Northeast, etc. And it just seems I have a tremendously difficult time keeping a connection when I start talking about this. Isn't that strange? Okay, so we got about a minute left in this show. Go to the webpage, updated webpage. It's concentrating on science. There's 6 gigabytes of information there, so you have to burrow down into the links that are there. And I'll be updating more and more information, especially using photographs and audio visuals, etc. So be sure to keep up with the webpage. And thanks also everybody who supports this show. Remember that this is a commercial-free show. Your purchases support not only this, but the wing generator, all of the other projects that I work on. And thank you very much for understanding that, and all the people that do support me through their purchases on the webpage. Once again, jmccsci.com. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.